I'm Jane Johnson. I started the Careering into Motherhood community for women who want a career as well as a family. I'd seen too many women leave careers and jobs that they loved because it didn't seem possible to fit it all in around childcare. I want motherhood and ambition to happily coexist. On our Facebook group, Careering into Motherhood, we've got 6,500 women now, and it's all about support, advice, and jobs. Our masterclasses and online workshops give mums the skills to build and remain in fulfilling careers. For more details on all of our upcoming programmes, including career coaching and CV writing, using LinkedIn with purpose, email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. My guest today is Lydia Fennett. She is the Global Managing Director of Strategic Partnerships and the lead auctioneer for charities at Christie's Auction House. But not only that, she has written a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You, which is all about women and the art of negotiation and selling. It's something that I know most women absolutely shudder, myself included, at the thought of. It conjures up images of people in shiny suits and cold calling and all that kind of thing. But the world has changed and we are now selling pretty much anything and everything. So Lydia's on the podcast to talk to me about how she came to write this book and her own experience that led her to the point where she was able to actually be an authority on the subject. I came across you when I was Googling about women and negotiation, something that kind of has been coming up in my psyche for quite some time now. And I came across a talk, I think, that you had given to Google, and then I came across your book, and more I thought, hang on a sec, I've got to invite Lydia on the podcast.
Thank you.
So could you just talk a little bit, first of all, about your career? Because you are also employed at Christie's, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I work at Christie's, and I've been at Christie's for 21 years.
And what's your role there for our audience?
I have two roles at Christie's. I'm the Global Managing Director of Strategic Partnerships, which is a very long and fancy title that essentially means that I run internal and external partnerships for the company. So if you are an automotive brand or hospitality brand or another kind of business that is in luxury and you're interested in partnering with us, then you come to me and my team creates the partnership. So that's really fun. And then in my other role, I'm the lead charity auctioneer for Christie's, which is really what a lot of my book is based on, because I feel like I've learned so many incredible lessons being on stage as a charity auctioneer about presentation and confidence, negotiation, all of the things that I think that women are constantly seeking more information about. And it's funny that you said that at the beginning of this, that you came upon me through women in negotiation, because, you know, 10 years ago, I would never have said that that was a strong point in my life, but certainly now it is. And it's something that I really enjoy and I enjoy talking about.
So is it something you believe? So for anyone out there at the moment listening who thinks, God, I'm never going to be any good at negotiation, you think it is something that can be taught?
Absolutely, because I think I taught it to myself.
That's the best advert.
I know. And I also think that there's a lot of something about the way that we are raised as women, which teaches us that negotiation is bad. But negotiation is the most important thing you will ever do for yourself in your life, because you're the only person who will negotiate on your behalf and no one can do it better. So I think a lot of times people equate negotiating for yourself as self-promotion, which in many ways it is. But again, I say, who better to promote you than you? And negotiation for me is something that becomes easier and easier the more you do it and the more you realize that at the end of the day, a no is not a personal thing. A no is a no at a situation. Once you realize that, I think you feel fearless in negotiations and you're willing to just step outside of yourself and really advocate for what you need or what you want.
And why do you think, I mean, I am vastly generalizing here, but from everything I see and hear and read, it is very gender specific and women tend to not be as confident entering a negotiation situation. Why do you think that is, or do you not agree?
I absolutely agree, because I truly believe that one thing we're taught as women at a very early age is that it's very important to be liked. And when you want to be liked, pushing for something which feels uncomfortable for either party, or pushing for or advocating for yourself, is not necessarily that something that comes easily, because I think traditionally it's been looked down upon. You know, nobody wants to be a self-promoter, right? But now we're learning that self-promoters are the ones who get what they want, and it doesn't have to be done at the expense of others. And I think that's the greatest lesson we've really learned in the past 2 or 3 years. I'm sure you've seen the campaign on Instagram right now, Women Empowering Women. They asked you to put a black and white photo of yourself. I mean, this would never have happened 5 or 6 years ago. It just wasn't the environment that we lived in. And so I think negotiation for women right now is something that not only can we can learn, but we can be great at doing. And that's what I want for people. I really do.
Yes. And certainly the sphere where I am, a lot of it comes down to women reaching a certain point in their career and then either finding out that a male colleague is paid more than them, or entering into a negotiation for usually for a job where they're going for a new role, and they just feel uncomfortable and downsold from the start when we enter that salary negotiation thing. Are things changing? And how do you know how far you can push for something without the person walking away?
A lot of it has to do with what you're asking for, right? If you go into a salary negotiation, I assure you that you are probably going in too low if you're thinking that there's a number that's anywhere close to what you're making right now, because an HR department typically has wiggle room. I'm a boss, so I can tell you this. You know, you can come in and ask for X. I probably have 5% to give you more. And if you're a really strong worker who I don't want to leave, I'm going to fight for you to stay. So I do believe when you walk into those negotiations, it's very important to think outside of, ooh, how will I feel when I go in and ask this? It should be more about what can I ask for, and at what point do I feel like I've come away with something that I'm happy with? And if you didn't get what you're happy with, the conversation is always about leaving the door open. And again, I don't ever believe that any of these conversations have to be contentious. I think that the beauty of negotiation is it can be done with a very light touch. But I do think that you want to make sure that you're making your points. You want to advocate for yourself and what you want. And you want to make sure that when you walk away, even if you don't actually get exactly what you wanted, you have given them an understanding that you are willing to go back and continue asking. I mean, I think about the last pay raise that I had, which was right before the book came out. And I've gone to my boss to discuss my salary and the fact that I wanted to make more than I was making, especially because I felt like I was about to give a company a book on female empowerment and was going to be really out there promoting this. And I sort of said, you know, I could take this book anywhere at this point, but I want to do this here. I feel like it's right for me to do it here, but I'm not going to hand this platform to you. And so when I went into the salary negotiations, they came back. I had gone in, I think I'd asked for double my salary, and they came back at 40%. And then I pushed again and was able to get slightly more. You know, look, given the downturn in the market, we were all asked to take a salary reduction. And, you know, I remember my husband sort of said to me after they asked about the salary reduction, and it was, you know, all the senior management had to take it. And he said, well, isn't it good that you negotiated for that extra amount at the end? Because when they shave it off, they're shaving it off the highest that you'd ever had. And so that's what negotiation is about. Right now, you know, if you're looking for a new job, just because it's the recession doesn't mean if someone offers you a job that you can't ask for a little more. You're not insulting anyone. This is their job. So just remember that in negotiations.
That's a really fascinating point. I just want to come back to where you talked about, so you were publishing your book and you used that or leveraged that in your salary negotiations. Now, I think most women that I talk to are almost told to sort of separate their side hustle, etc., whatever you want to call it, from the day job. And yet, absolutely, when I now, it suddenly falls into place as you're talking, everything I've read about you, you talk about how you work at Christie's and you're very senior there. So there's an absolute benefit and shine that comes over to Christie's as well as your writing work. And yet you published independently, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely. I negotiated the entire thing independently. Christie's actually didn't know that I was doing any of it. I told the New York Times in an article that I was writing a book called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room. It wasn't even Is You at this point, because I'd only written, well, I basically written nothing at this point. But it really forced me to get my proposal together, I will tell you that. But it was interesting because after I said it, I then had to write the proposal, but I sold it a week later based on the proposal. And then I wrote it in 3 months. And it was one of those things that I was doing at night after I put my children to bed, after I had stepped off of the charity auctioneering stage. And it wasn't something that I was ever doing in the office. It wasn't something I ever really talked about in the office. And when it was complete, I gave it to work to look at. And I remember saying to my boss at the time, I want you to read this, but unless it is legally going to get us in trouble, I will not take it out because this is the truth. And you know that. And she had worked for the company for over 20 years at that point, and she knew that it was. And so she came back and gave me a big thumbs up through my glass door a couple of three or four days later. And I sobbed at my desk because I wanted that approval. I've loved my company and I've loved working for there. And a lot of the lessons I've learned as a result of being in a place where I had a reputation and I was secure in my job. And so that's a lot of the reason I felt like I could write it. But I think at the same time, I did know that it was going to be good for the company. And I also knew that, you know, I had an outside PR firm that did an entire media analysis after the book tour and all of the subsequent events followed. And the book garnered over 1 billion media impressions. And Christie's was mentioned in every single one of those, and never in a negative light, because that was never my intent. It was to open the door to conversation, not to say anything negative about the company.
On the 3rd of September, I'm delighted to announce that we will be hosting Viv Groskop, who is the author of a number of books, including How to Own the Room and podcast of the same name. Brilliant podcast. If you haven't listened to that one, you really must. And her newest book is called Lift As You Climb, which is all about women and ambition. We'll be talking about all of that great stuff, how you can be an ambitious woman and help others, and what the impact of COVID-19 has been on the idea of female leadership and ambitious women. Our classes are 90 minutes long, online, in the evening. You can buy a ticket for less than £30, and it includes a copy of Viv's brilliant book. Check out our Facebook group or email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com, for details, or you can find us on Eventbrite. For our audience who maybe haven't come across your book yet, what can you talk a little bit about what's the premise of your book? Obviously, the most powerful woman in the room is you. You talk about ambition, negotiation, careers, and why now?
Why now? I really wrote the book because I had been in this situation for many years where I would get off stage after a dinner at a charity auction where I was seated next to, you know, 9 or 10 people at a round table. And I'd be sitting there eating dinner. And then I would get on stage and smash down a gavel and raise $500,000 in 10 minutes and then sit back down as if nothing had happened. And everyone was sort of like, what just happened there? I'm so confused because we were talking about X and then you went on stage and did that. And then you came back down. And it's so innate in me now. It's sort of like I can conjure up an auction out of nothing. I mean, I did it 10 times on my book tour where I would just sort of auction off nothing just to auction off something. And it's so funny because to me, it's so much a part of my personality that every time someone asked that question, I would really try to figure out how I knew something or how I'd figured something out. And I felt like the question that I was asked the most was by women who would come up to me afterwards. And actually, it wasn't even a really question. It was more of a comment from them. They would say, How did you do that? I could never do that. I could never sell anything. I'm so bad at selling. And I could never ask anyone for money. And it was said to me so many times, and I always would smile and nod. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I started saying to people, of course you could do it. Anybody can do it. If I could do it, I grew up in the South. My mother is British. I was very much taught to sort of be there and smile and sort of leave it there and not ask for anything and never rock the boat. And yet I can get up there and do it. So why couldn't you? And that really became the reason for the book. It was to answer that question and to give people tools to dig deeper into themselves and realize that you can change anything and you can do anything that you want, you know, and that's really the takeaway from the book, you know, the power is within you. It's not something that someone gives you.
And do you believe that there is a change in the way that business is being done, you know, either in a post-COVID world, which I appreciate the US isn't quite in a post-COVID world yet, but where the rest of the world is sort of heading, but, you know, this idea that actually some of the traditionally female traits, there may be more room for that, like empathy and communication, and how we can harness those, but also use them in a sales environment without, you know, not hard sales, but selling something.
Absolutely. And I made my book Hot Pink because I wanted, I remember talking to Simon & Schuster about this when we were talking about the book cover, which I thought was so important. And I just kept saying, it can't be white. It has to be pink. I don't know why I felt so strongly about it. Actually, that's not true. I do know why I felt strongly about it. I felt strongly about it because I wanted a mom who felt powerful, but also felt underneath piles of diapers and had dreams, but just felt like she couldn't quite get there anymore. I wanted her to understand that you can do it if you want to, and there are ways to do it, and here are some tips to help you do it. And I didn't want her to be scared off by what looked like a business manual or like a tome for working women and working women only, because that was not my intent in writing it. My intent was that you can take ownership of anything you want in your life, whether it be you want to be the head of the PTA, you want to be the CEO of a company, you want to start your own business and be a half-time mom, half-time, not that there's such a thing as a half-time mom, as we know, but half-time in a room locked where your kids don't run in like I am right now. I just think that there was so much about this book that I felt would help women embrace their femininity in a sales role and help them use those skills to sell. As an auctioneer, when I'm on stage, there are tips that I would give to my female auctioneering trainees that would work better for them than they would for a guy. I mean, simple things. Like I remember talking in a class once about one of my first auctions where I was in a pair of heels and I almost tripped getting off the stage because I was taught by guys, and the guys would get off the stage and run around the audience. And what I quickly realized is it's not the same navigating, you know, little cables that connect to things and they catch your heel while you're walking around. And also there's something in the approach of a woman walking up to a table, in my opinion, it didn't go over as well as it did when I was on stage. And so, you know, some of my male colleagues would run over and sort of embrace people. And I always felt like I needed to be up on that stage and be a little more professional because I didn't want there to be this assumption that I was trying to use my femininity to woo people. It was more like, I can still be professional. I can use my femininity. I can use the fact that I'm pregnant or that I'm a totally different species from what you think you should see on stage as an auctioneer, but I can use that to my advantage. And I feel like that's the same in sales. You can use the things, that empathy and that humanity and that all of those things that we're seeing that leaders need right now in everything that you can do. And again, I always say, it's something my mother said because she's British, it's not bad or good, it's different. So it's not that the guys are doing it poorly or badly, it's just different. And that's great. And they can continue being effective in that way. And guess what? As women, we can also do it effectively and beautifully, and it can be done differently, and it can be done in hot pink, and that can still be powerful.
And you sound like a very confident person. And I guess a lot of our listeners as well would think, well, you know, that's okay for Lydia. She gets up on a stage and has the command of hundreds of people. A lot of women lose huge amounts of confidence after pregnancy, and if they take time out of the workforce and then trying to get back in. Have you always had this very confident style? And what did it take for you to be comfortable in your own skin, or any tips you can share with our audience?
When I first started taking auctions, I was not confident at all. I was really just pretending to do exactly what I had seen the guys that I trained with doing. So I stood up on stage and I was very formal, and I took all the charity auctions as an art auction, and I spouted out numbers, and I never talked about the audience, and I did exactly what I thought I should do. And it was totally mediocre. You know, people talked over me. It was really soul crushing. I don't know why I continued doing it so much, honestly, when I really think back, because I did it for about 5 years and I probably took somewhere between 70 and 100 a year. So let's say on average, I probably had taken about 400 very mediocre auctions. And I decided at this sort of point, without even really knowing what I was about to do, I had this instance that I talk about in the book where I was very sick and got up on stage to take an auction. And it was like, I almost couldn't, feels like there's a dog fight outside. I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Not entirely okay. Sure. We only have one small dog, so I'm not entirely sure. I think this must be like a neighborhood fight. Maybe we'll wait until this is over.
This is very real. This is a real podcast with real moms.
Okay, well, then the moms will understand. I was successful in keeping my children, but however, there seems to be a random dog that is on this podcast. So basically, I was on stage and I just couldn't pretend that I was anyone other than me because I just felt terrible. And there was a woman seated in front of me who I had been seated next to years prior when the guy that I thought I was going to marry broke my heart. And I come into work the next morning after he broke up with me the night before in a very sort of unceremonious, I have strong feelings for you, I do not love you kind of moment, which did not
feel great. We've all been there.
Yes, exactly. And I cried and cried and cried the whole lunch, which would have been fine, except I was supposed to be in charge of the lunch because I was running the events department at that point. Yes. And she was a huge client and she could not have been kinder. And so when I saw her in the audience, as I would have if I had been talking to one of my friends, I felt that I had to mention it. So I wove that narrative into the lot and said, lot number one, ladies and gentlemen, you will have dinner at the home of Jennifer, blah, 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 and it will be fabulous. You will have cocktails. You will see her incredible art collection, which is where I would have ended it, except for that night where I said, and I can also tell you that I sat next to Jennifer when the man that I thought I was going to marry dumped me. So if you are currently in therapy, she can nurse you back to health in an hour. And I know this because I sat next to her. And it was one of those moments where all of a sudden I thought to myself, oh my gosh, people actually stop talking, which for a carry off mirror is really about as good as it gets. You know, if you can get a crowd even half quiet, then you have crushed your auction, in my opinion. And so that was it. And then every lot after that, I just started throwing in a joke or, you know, something that was just funny. And everybody was listening and they were laughing and they were having fun. And all of a sudden I thought, all right, well, this is how this is going to work from now on, because this is how it works. That for me was the moment that it all really shifted. And ever since then, you know, over time, this style got more and more flamboyant to the point where it's almost sort of like I can say anything that I want on stage. And if you knew me well, you would know that I have not like a dirty sense of humor bone in my body. I have none of the sort of like crassness of a great comedian, but I can certainly, you know, figure out a couple of key points over the course of an auction to keep people engaged and keep them laughing and keep a crowd galvanized. And that's what I do now. And as I said before, you know, I was pregnant taking auctions. I was 9 months pregnant on stage, and I would laughingly say to the audience, I don't know who's more uncomfortable, ladies and gentlemen. Is it you or is it me? It's probably you. I feel fine, but you guys look very uncomfortable. So let's see if we can wrap this up and get me home and not to the hospital. Please get this girl off stage. So yeah, it's one of those things I think that was a life lesson for me and has really shown me time and time again that authenticity is often key to great sales and negotiation and letting people in on that part of your life that you thought maybe you should hide. I mean, you think about the absurdity of getting on stage 9 months pregnant. I mean, how can you hide that? And yet I would think that if I had taken auctions 16 years ago, I would have marched on that stage with my big belly and said nothing about it instead of announcing that the other option was the hospital.
Amazing. I love that story. It's brilliant. Now, I know that time is marching on and you've got a very hard deadline, but I do just want to quickly touch upon, I believe that you are, having written The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You, you're working on The Most Powerful Girl. I'd love to know a bit more about that because I think it's such an important subject, empowering young women.
Women, absolutely. You know, it was something that I heard on the book tour. It was every woman who came up, a lot of them probably in their 30s and 40s and even 50s and 60s sometimes, they would say to me, you know, I'm going to read this, but I'm kind of a lost cause. And I, of course, would say, no, you're not. Read the book, then come back to me. But they would say, please write this for my daughter. Please write this for my granddaughter, or I'm going to buy this book. Will you inscribe it for my daughter? How old is your daughter? She's 7. And I would say, okay, well, this might be a little bit, I don't know if she needs to know about like how complicated life can be. So perhaps we should do something younger to address that. And I also have, you know, I have 3 children, 2 of whom are girls, and I see, you know, I already see what comes for them in the course of their life. And I want to prepare my daughters for that. And I feel like I'm in a position to do that now. So that's kind of where it all started. And you know, hopefully that will be the way it turns out. And it will have the same effect that I think the book has had on many women who read it and said to me, this is my story. This is exactly who I am, and this is what I want to do and who I want to be. And so hopefully if we can get that to them at an earlier age, by the time they read it, when they read my book when they're 21, they'll say, oh, I've already figured this all out.
Let's hope. Well, yeah. I know your stories really resonate with so many of us. And so interesting that actually being the other side of the Atlantic doesn't matter either. So I'm really grateful to you for making the time. Thanks very much, Lydia.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for reaching out. I'm always so thrilled to meet people, even if it's just on a podcast. And hopefully one day, if we are ever able to fly out of the United States again, I'll get to in person.
We can but hope. Yes.
I know, right?
What a brilliant interview with Lydia there. Absolute whistle stop, complete New Yorker, but I loved all of her ideas and tips for women and selling. I love the way that she talked about this thing that keeps on coming up as well, about being authentic, being comfortable in your own skin is about being true to yourself, and how she just gradually grew into that sort of mindset. So I really hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, and I'll see you again very soon.